Okay, let's dive in here. We've got this really fascinating stack of sources, shared articles, some research, your notes, all circling around one pretty remarkable moment in sports history.
Yeah, it's a good one.
The topic today is the 1934 US Open, held at the legendary Marion Golf Club. And our mission really is to pull out the most compelling bits, the surprising stuff, and the core story of this championship, because it stands out not just for the golf itself, but for this incredible human drama wrapped up in it.
Absolutely. It's one of those stories that kind of transcends the sport, doesn't it? You get into resilience, adversity, universal themes.
And here's where it gets really interesting. This wasn't just, your standard golf tournament. It was a fight against this incredibly tough course, Marion. You had an elite field, including a giant of the time, Gene Sarazen, and for the guy who eventually won, Alain Dutre. It was this battle against a severe debilitating illness that, well, it almost made him pull out entirely.
Right. That's the core of it, really.
So we'll dig into the challenges of Marion, what golf was like during the Great Depression, and this just astounding performance by Alain Dutre. His win is still called one of the most courageous ever.
So as we start looking through all this material, what jumps out at you first about this particular US Open?
I think what's immediately clear is just the sheer convergence of challenges. You've got the course itself, Marion, known for being tough, distinctive, hosting the national championship. Then the competition, I mean, Sarazen was arguably the best in the world then.
Right.
And layered on top of that is this extraordinary, almost unbelievable personal health crisis that Alain Dutre was dealing with. The stage was tough anyway, but Dutre's situation just cranked the drama way, way up.
Okay, let's start there then with the stage. Marianne Golf Club, 1934. It already had this incredible aura, didn't it? Just 4 years before, Bobby Jones completed his Grand Slam right there with the U.S. amateur win. Exactly. Yeah. Marianne's East Course. Even though it's on a relatively small piece of land, what is it, 126 acres, it was already cemented as a top-tier venue. Hugh Wilson's design, he'd studied British courses, and it gave Marion this really unique, demanding feel.
And that feel included those features everyone recognizes, the white faces of Marion, those distinctive Scottish-style bunkers.
Precisely. And then the wicker baskets, set of flags on the pins, they'd been using those at Marion since, well, at least 1916, apparently. Red on the front nine, orange on the back.
Yeah, iconic.
And they're not just for show, you know? They actually deny players that crucial information about wind direction near the green. Adds another significant layer of complexity when you're trying to pick a club.
Which must have been critical because the conditions during that 1934 Open were, by all accounts, absolutely brutal. The sources keep mentioning brutal, windy conditions that reached semi-gale velocity on that final day.
Brutal is the word. That didn't just make the course harder. The wind almost became like another competitor out there, actively messing with shots, pushing scores up. Marion's wasn't just scenery. It was a relentless test, which is why Jack Nicklaus later called it maybe the best test of golf in the world, acre for acre.
Wow, that's high praise.
It really is, coming from him.
So let's just frame the tournament itself. 38th US Open, June 7th to 9th, standard 72-hole stroke play. The East Course was set up at 6,694 yards, par 70.
And the field started huge. Over 1,000 guys, 1,063 tried to qualify. Eventually got down to 146 players actually starting the tournament. And get this, only 65 made the cut. And the
Wow.
cut was 155. That's 15 over par for just 36 holes. I mean, that number alone tells you how punishing Marion was playing that week.
Yeah, no kidding. And the prize money, it really paints a picture of the times, doesn't it? Total purse was $5,000. The winner, Dutra, got $1,000. Sarazen got $750 for second.
Seems tiny now, but you have to remember the context. $1,000 during the absolute depths of the Great Depression, that was serious money. To put it in perspective, the leading money winner on the PGA Tour that whole year, Paul Runyon, earned just $6,767 for the entire season. Dutra had won the PGA Championship back in 32, also for $1,000. And that apparently had the buying power of over $22,000 today. So, yeah, it underscores the stakes for these guys and just the economic reality they were living in.
Okay, now let's really get into Alain Dutre's story because this is where the human drama just goes off the charts. He wasn't just fighting Marion and Sarazen, he was fighting his own body big time.
He really was. More than a year before the Open, he'd contracted amoebic dysentery, which is a really, really severe intestinal infection. Debilitating. And apparently, as he was traveling to Marion from California, it flared up badly. So badly, he actually had to be hospitalized for a bit in Detroit on the way.
Jess, can you imagine trying to prepare for a major like that? The sources say he lost between 15 and 20 pounds from his usual, what, 230-pound frame, all because of this illness.
Yeah. Competing at that level on that course in those conditions, having lost that much weight and fighting an acute illness, it's almost unthinkable, really.
Yeah.
He was seriously considering withdrawing. Apparently, it was his brother, Morty, who was also playing, who talked him into just trying to give it a go.
And he was literally surviving on sugar cubes and water. That's what the doctor ordered, just to keep his energy up and fight dehydration. That image, him out there, fueled by sugar water and just sheer guts, it's incredibly powerful.
It really says everything about his determination.
Yeah.
And given all that, you know, he wasn't exactly the media darling heading into the tournament. All the attention was on the big names. Sarrazin, Johnny Goodman, Walter Hagen.
Right. He flies under the radar. He opens with a 76, 6-over par. That put him 5 strokes behind the first round leaders right away. Cruikshank, Cox, and Lacy all shot 71.
He did shoot a better round of 74 on the second day. But still, his 36-hole total was 150, tied for 18th place. And crucially, he was a daunting 8 strokes behind the halfway leader, Bobby Cruikshank. Sarrazin, meanwhile, was only 3 back of Cruikshank.
So halfway through, T18, 8 shots adrift, severely ill. Honestly, just making the cut, which was 155, must have felt like a huge victory in itself for him.
Oh, absolutely. A monumental effort. And then came Saturday, the final day. A grueling 36 holes played in one day. That format alone is just a supreme test of physical and mental endurance, even for someone perfectly healthy. Let alone someone in Dutra's shape.
And this is where the comeback story just ignites. In that morning round, the third round, Dutra sheets a remarkable 71, just 1-over par.
Yeah, that round was huge. Shut him right at the leaderboard. He finished 54 holes at 221, tied for 4th place now, but dramatically, he was suddenly just 3 strokes behind the new leader, Gene Sarrazin.
Wow. He clawed back 5 strokes on the leader in just one round, 8 strokes back to 3 back. The sources point out that at the time, this was the largest comeback in U.S. Open history after 36 holes, a record that stood for, what, over 2 decades? Until Arnold Palmer matched it in 1960.
Exactly.
That right there tells you how improbable his performance was becoming.
It absolutely does. And this wasn't just about, you know, hitting good shots. It seems like it was a profound display of mental strength, too. Dutra had apparently admitted before to having this inferiority complex that held him back in majors.
Mm.
But leading up to 34, he supposedly told a friend, "You know I have the shots to win. Now my inferiority complex is banished. The old chin is out. I am going to fight." So that deliberate shift in mindset, plus having his brother Morty there encouraging him, it seems like that was just pivotal to making that comeback possible.
So the final round, it basically becomes this tense duel. Dutra's playing with Lawson Little. He stays close. They both match Sarrazin's front nine score, a 38. So Dutra is still 3 strokes back heading to the final 9 holes.
Right. And that's where the whole tournament flipped. Dutra birdies the 10th hole. It's a short par 4. Almost drove the green. And almost at the exact same time, Sarrazin, playing just ahead of him, hooks his drive way left into a ditch on the 11th hole. A tough par 5.
Yeah.
It leads to a costly triple bogey. A 7.
A triple bogey. On the 11th. For Sarrazin. Ouch. That's a 4-shot swing against par right there on one hole. For a player like Sarrazin holding the lead, that had to be absolutely devastating.
It was the defining moment of his round, no question. Dutra, meanwhile, just stayed remarkably steady. He added another crucial birdie on the 15th hole, which actually gave him the outright lead. He did bogey the last 2 holes, 17 and 18, but his final round, 72, was just enough.
The scene on 18 must have been something. He needed a bogey 5 to win. He hits a good drive, then his spoon, which is basically like a 3-wood, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Hits that to the edge of the green.
And his brother Morty is right there in the gallery, apparently shouting, "Take it easy, Olin," as he's getting ready for that final crucial putt. But Dutra showed amazing composure, lagged it up close, tapped in for the bogey and the win.
His winning score, 293. Which is 13 over par. And the sources note this is still the highest winning total in U.S. Open history. And that one fact, 13 over par winning, just tells you everything about how tough Marion was and those conditions were that week. It wasn't about destroying the course. It was about surviving it better than anyone else.
It absolutely underscores the brutal test Marion presented.
Yeah.
The combination of that 36-hole final day, the crazy wind, and Dutra's own physical state.
Yeah.
It just created this incredibly difficult scoring environment. Led to those wild swings on the leaderboard, too.
So what about Sarrazin, the titan, the guy everyone probably expected to win?
Yeah, Gene Sarrazin. I mean, he was already a towering figure in golf. Unquestionably one of the giants of that golden age, alongside Jones and Hagen. By 34, he had already won 2 U.S. Opens, 3 PGA Championships, the Open Championship. He was just missing the Masters, which he'd win the very next year to complete the career Grand Slam. A legend.
And he was leading after 54 holes here, 3 strokes clear of Dutra.
Yes, absolutely in the driver's seat. But that triple bogey on the 11th in the final round, hooking it into the ditch, that was the killer. He finished just one single stroke behind Dutra at 294, 14 over par. That one tee shot really fundamentally cost him the championship.
Wow.
It just shows you how razor thin the margins are at that level, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And how fast a lead can just evaporate, even for someone as great as Sarazen.
It really does. And Sarazen wasn't just a great player. He was an innovator too, right? He's the guy credited with inventing the modern sandwich.
That's right. Famously used it for the first time at the Open in 1932.
Yeah.
Had it soldered to the flange, helped it glide through sand instead of digging in. Brilliant idea. Revolutionized bunker play.
Amazing. So while it came down to Dutra and Sarazen, were there other guys really pushing them?
Oh yeah, definitely. Bobby Cruikshank, the Scot. He was the early leader, remember? Shot back-to-back 71s to lead after 36 holes. But he really struggled on that final 36-hole day, especially coming in, bogeyed 5 of the last 7 holes in the final round. Ouch. He ended up tied for third. Yeah. And Whiffy Cox, he'd shared the first round lead. He stayed near the top pretty much all week, also finished tied for third. And Harry Cooper was the other guy tied for third. Their stories kind of highlight how volatile U.S. Open leaderboards can be, especially under that pressure cooker of a 36-hole final day in tough conditions. Just hanging on is incredibly hard.
It's a test of attrition, really, isn't it? As much as skill. So shifting back to Alan Dutra, he had some great nicknames. King Kong, Slam and Spaniard, Golden Basque.
Ah, yeah, they definitely capture something, don't they? Reflects his size and heritage. He was a big dude, 6'3". Known for hitting it a long way, turned pro back in 1924. And his career really peaked with those two majors, yeah. The 32 PGA, where he was dominant, yeah. And then this unbelievable 34 U.S. Open win.
And he was the first U.S. Open champ born west of the Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
Which was kind of a milestone back then.
That's right, yeah. Born in California. He had other strong finishes too, you know, at the Masters, the Open.
Yeah.
Played on 2 Ryder Cup teams. He even led the PGA Tour money list in 1932. So while his major wins were kind of concentrated in that short period, those were huge achievements, especially against the players he was up against.
But ultimately, like we've been saying, his legacy, it seems less about the stats and more about that almost superhuman resilience he showed at Marion. Overcoming that severe illness while winning a major, it just feels unique in golf history.
It truly sets his victory apart. It wasn't just, you know, skill winning out. It was sheer will. Triumph of will over body, almost. And apparently he was very highly regarded as a teaching pro later in his life, too. Gave a lot back to the game.
And all of this incredible drama, is playing out against the backdrop of the Great Depression. How did that bigger picture, that context, impact golf?
Well, it was undoubtedly a really tough time for the sport. Just like every other industry, you saw club memberships drop dramatically. Some courses even faced closure. It's just,
yeah,
a struggle. But kind of paradoxically, golf also served as an escape for people, didn't it? A source of distraction, maybe even inspiration during really hard times. And Dutra's story, that perseverance, it certainly resonates with that need for hope people had back then.
And like we touched on, the prize money definitely reflected those harsh economic realities.
Absolutely. But even with all the hardship, the sport was also going through some really significant changes that were shaping modern pro golf.
Mm.
You had the widespread adoption of steel shafts replacing the old hickory ones. That brought a lot more consistency.
Right.
And golf ball technology was improving too, helping performance.
And the whole structure of the professional game was evolving too, wasn't it? Guys like Bob Harlow working to set up a proper year-round tournament circuit, trying to boost prize money. The Playing Pros organization was forming, basically laying the groundwork for what became the PGA Tour.
Exactly. And let's not forget, 1934 was the year the Masters was founded by Bobby Jones and Clifford Robert.
Oh, right. Same year.
Yeah. A monumental development right in the middle of all this. Add in the rise of radio, better newspaper coverage, more people than ever could follow the sport and its stars. So the 1934 Open wasn't just this great tournament story in isolation. It was really a snapshot of golf in this pivotal, transformative moment, grappling with the Depression, but also embracing new technology and new structures.
So, okay, let's try and wrap this up. What does this all mean? We've done this deep dive into the 1934 U.S. Open, really uncovering the layers, the difficulty of Marion's design, those brutal conditions, the tough competition with the giants like Sarazen, and then, most profoundly, this extraordinary personal battle fought and won by Olin Dutra.
Yeah, for Marion's unique look, the white faces, bunkers, those weird wicker baskets, to the stark reality of the prize money back then, and that just incredible 8-stroke comeback, fueled, literally, by sugar cubes and pure willpower. This dive really shows how much more a sporting event can be than just numbers on a scoreboard.
It really highlighted Marion as this relentless test, almost a test of survival. Sarazen's near miss, basically hinging on one bad swing on one hole, and Dutra's triumph as just this towering example of human resilience, a victory described as what courageous as any ever scored on the golf links, and one of the most heroic and inspirational moments in the U.S. Open's history. High praise indeed.
And it all happened during such a transformative time for golf, mirroring the struggle society was facing in the Depression, sure, but also showing how the sport could still captivate people and how it was evolving with new tech and new ways of organizing itself.
You know, the story of Olin Dutra overcoming such severe personal adversity, physical adversity, while competing at the absolute highest level, it does raise a fascinating question for you to think about. How much of any great achievement, whether it's in sports or anywhere else, really, how much is pure physical skill or talent, and how much is just that sheer, stubborn refusal to quit, even when you're facing challenges that seem completely insurmountable? Something to chew on as you reflect on this pretty remarkable deep dive.